Our scripture reading tonight will be from the book of Acts, chapter 13, verses 13 through 23. Now, when Paul had accompanied Lucian to Permos, he came to Perga in Pamphylia, and John departed from them, returned to Jerusalem. But when they had departed from Perga, they came to Antioch in Pisidia and went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and sat down. And after the reading of the law of the prophets, the rulers of the synagogue sent unto them, saying, "Ye men and brethren, if ye have any word of exhortation for the people, say on." Then Paul stood up and beckoned with his hand and said, "Men of Israel, and ye that fear God, give audience. The God of our people of Israel chose our fathers and exalted the people when they had dwelled as strangers in the land of Egypt, and with the high arm brought he them out of it. And about the time of 40 years suffered their manners in the wilderness. And when they had destroyed seven nations in the land of Canaan, he divided their land to them by lot. And after he gave unto them judges about a space of 450 years until Samuel the prophet. And afterwards they desired a king. And God gave them Samuel, the son of Cis, a man of the tribe of Benjamin, by the space of 40 years. And when he had removed him, he rose up unto them David to be their king, and to whom also he gave testimony and said, I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, which shall fulfill all my will. Of this man, the seed had God, according to his promise, raised up the Israel, a Savior, Jesus."
In Acts, the 13th chapter, the Apostle Paul is in Antioch, Pisidia, in the synagogue, and he's reviewing to these people the history of their nation. As he begins with Abraham in verse 16 and following, he also describes how that they wandered in the wilderness. They asked for a king. Saul was made the first king, and then Saul was rejected because of his rebellion, and David then was made king of Israel. When we think of David, we generally think of the great things that he did in his life, and that's good. We often identify David as one who conquered a lot of people, and he did. We often think of David as a great hero of faith, and he was. And we like heroes. We like heroes. We often put them on a pedestal and admire the things that they have accomplished, and that's good. But David's life was filled with a lot of things, not only that were good, but a lot of things that were bad. And there were a lot of lessons that David needed to learn. I want you to open your Bible, if you will, to the books of 1 and 2 Samuel. We're going to look at these somewhat extensively in our study tonight and see some of the things that David faced, some of the things that he accomplished, and some of the things that he did not accomplish. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, 2 Samuel chapter 8 it is, in 2 Samuel chapter 8, reading beginning at verse 2, the text tells us that he smote Moab. If you'll drop down to verse 3, he smote Hadadezer, the son of Rehob, king of Zobah. If you'll drop down to verse 5, that David smote the Syrians, 22,000. And then in verse 9, Toi, the king of Hamath, heard of these things. In verse 14, we learn that he put garrisons in Edom, and throughout all the Edom put he garrisons. Time and time again, we read of the great victories that David gained over those who were his enemies. And perhaps one of the most familiar things that we know about David has to do with Goliath the Philistine. Turn back, if you will, to 1 Samuel chapter 17. In 1 Samuel chapter 17 is where we're going to be reading about that. But I want to call your attention to the incident that brought that about. David, or Saul rather, is embattled with the Philistines. And the Philistines send out a giant whose name was Goliath. Now we refer to Goliath as a giant. Well, by our standards, I suppose that he very much was. As we read concerning his height in chapter 17, in verse 4, it tells us that he was 6 cubits and a span. Now, I know that really defines it for most of you. But a cubit, I understand, was the distance from the tip of the finger to the elbow, averaging about 18 inches. And a span was measured from the tip of your finger, little finger, to your thumb. Spread out like that. So you can kind of get an idea about what 6 cubits and a span looked like. It would be in the neighborhood of about 9'9", in the neighborhood of about 10 feet tall. That's a pretty tall fella. And when you consider the proportion of one that tall, he was a big man. And thus, by our standards and by most standards, he would be referred to as a giant. But Goliath of the Philistines essentially made fun of Israel's army, and in particular King Saul. It tells us that the Philistines, in verse 16, drew near morning and evening and presented himself, or the Philistine, Goliath, presented himself 40 days. That's a long time to be intimidated and to be at a standstill, as it were, against the enemy. King Saul made an offer to someone who would fight with the Philistines. In verse 25 of the 17th chapter, it says, "And the men of Israel said, Have you seen this man that has come up? Surely to defy Israel he has come up, and it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king, will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and will make his father's house free in Israel." And then in verse 26, David spoke to the men that stood by him, saying, "What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and taketh away the reproach for Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" Now David's got it right. Who is this Philistine that thinks he can defy the armies of God? No, in verse 32, David continues, as he speaks to Saul, he said, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine." And Saul said unto David, "Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth." And David said unto Saul, "Thy servant was keeping his father's sheep, and when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb out of the flock, I went after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by the beard and smote him and slew him. Thy servant smote both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God." And David said, "Jehovah that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine." Now, I know that those of you who are in the younger classes have been studying about David and Goliath and how that David conquered Goliath. You recall how that David, in verse 40, took his staff in his hand and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook and put them in the shepherd's bag which he had, even in his wallet, and his sling was in his hand. And he drew near to the Philistine. Now picture that. The Philistine, a man of war since his youth. Huge man, nearly 10 feet tall. David, as it were, very small in proportion to this giant of a man. And without sword, without spear, without shield. David approaches this giant with a slingshot and 5 smooth stones. Now you recall the words of David in verse 45. It says, "Then said David to the Philistine, Thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to thee in the name of Jehovah of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will Jehovah deliver thee into my hand, and I will smite thee and take thy head from off thee. And I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day unto the birds of the heavens and unto the wild beast of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. In verse 47, and all this, or that all this assembly may know that Jehovah saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is Jehovah's, and he will give you into our hand. In verse 49, David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slung it and smote the Philistine in his forehead, and the stone sank into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. In verse 50 beginning, we read how that David took that giant's sword and cut his head off, just like David said that he would do. Now that impresses us. That makes a hero out of David, does it not? David killed a lion and a bear, and he killed the Goliath, the Philistine. And the women began to praise David for all that he has done. In verse 7 of the 18th chapter, it says that the women sang one to another as they played and said, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. How you think that went over with King Saul? Knowing that he had already rejected the commandment of God and been rejected as king, and that David was to be his replacement. And now we see that the women are praising young David for all the great things that he has done. They see David as a hero. They put David on a pedestal. But you know, when we consider David, even from the perspective that God viewed him, we see David as an outstanding young man. In 1 Samuel chapter 6, or chapter 16, reading beginning at verse 6, we'll not read the entirety of this, but I simply want you to see that Samuel is to anoint David to be the second king over the nation of Israel. In verse 7, it tells us, But Jehovah said unto Samuel, Look not on his countenance, or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him, for Jehovah seeth not as man seeth. For man looketh on the outward appearance, but Jehovah looketh on the heart. Now that as a result of the oldest son of Eliab, or rather Eliab, standing before Samuel. Eliab was not to be king. And then in verse 8, another son of Jesse, Abinadab. No, he was not to be king. And then yet another son, Shammah, passed by. And no, he was not to be king. And the text tells us in verse 10 that Jesse made seven of his sons to pass before Samuel, and none of them was to be king. In verse 11, And Samuel said unto Jesse, Are here all thy children? And he said, There remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he is keeping the sheep. And Samuel said unto Jesse, Send and fetch him, for we will not sit down till he come hither. And he sent and brought him. Now he was ruddy and withal of a beautiful countenance, goodly to look upon. And Jehovah said, Arise, anoint him, for this is he. Now you put all that together. Here is a young man who has defeated a lion. He has defeated a bear. He has defeated Goliath, the Philistine. He is one that is recognized here as ruddy, a beautiful countenance, goodly to look upon, and even the women are singing. Saul has killed his thousands and David his 10,000s. Well, that escalates David as some kind of hero, does it not? Well, indeed. David is received, or to be the one who would receive the promise. Through David, the throne would be established, and in his seed, there would be one that would become a blessing unto all the world. In Acts the 13th chapter, as Paul preaches in Antioch, Pisidia, he mentions a rather interesting note about David, that he is a man after God's own heart. And something else that I find rather significant about David is that his name is recorded in the list of heroes of faith in Hebrews chapter 11.
And the writer tells us, as he mentions David, that if he mentions all of the things that they did, that the book would not contain them all. There wouldn't be a book big enough. And so David did a lot of good things. Being recognized by God as a man after his own heart. When David faced Goliath, we might think, facing a man nearly 10 feet tall, that it would be something we would be afraid of, and perhaps David was. But David had confidence in the Lord. He recognized that the same God that had delivered the lion into his hand, the same bear or the bear into his hand, that he would indeed deliver this Philistine into his hand and deliver the Israelites through his hand and make known the power of God. Indeed, as David faced fear, he overcame fear. He faced Goliath the Philistine and proclaimed the power of God. But David had a battle with pride. As you'll turn once again to 1 Samuel chapter 16, there in verse 18. 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 18. Again we learn concerning young David. The writer says, "Then answered one of the young men and said, Behold, I have seen a son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, that is skillful in playing, and a mighty man of valor, and a man of war, and prudent in speech, and a comely person, and Jehovah is with him." That's a pretty good resume, isn't it? And so, it would be difficult if all you did was right, and you were such a great fella, to not let that go to your head. And David had some troubles with that. You recall that pride was one of the things that caused King Saul to fall. King Saul was lifted up in his heart, and he presumed that he was qualified to offer a sacrifice or to burn incense to find out what God would have him to do before he faced the Philistines. You recall that it was Saul's desire to bring back the best of the Amalekites and offer them as a sacrifice unto God. Saul was lifted up in pride, and it cost him his kingdom. But after war with the Philistines, we learned that young David desired to number the people. The captain of his army, Joab, said, "No, don't do that. God has already showed you that He will multiply your people 100 times what the soldiers are." In other words, there's not anybody, regardless of thousands upon thousands of enemies, that can conquer you if God is with you. So don't number the people. But David didn't listen. In fact, he sent Joab out to number the people. And I want to call your attention to 1 Chronicles chapter 21, keeping in mind that the Chronicles are simply a parallel account of the things that we read in the Kings. 1 Chronicles chapter 21. In 1 Chronicles chapter 21, look, if you would, please, at verse 7. After the people were numbered, it tells us that God was displeased with this thing. Therefore He smote Israel. And David said unto God, "I have sinned greatly in that I have done this thing. But now put away, I beseech thee, the iniquity of thy servant, for I have done very foolishly." You see, the people are beginning to suffer for the thing that David has done. But God gives David 3 choices as far as punishment or consequences are concerned. In verse 12, the writer says, "Either 3 years of famine, or 3 months to be consumed before thy foes, while the sword of thine enemies overtaketh thee, or else 3 days the sword of Jehovah, even pestilence in the land." Now what would you take? You think about that for a moment. Which one would you take? David said that he would rather cast himself, as it were, upon the mercy of God, to be in the hands of the Lord rather than to be in the hands of his enemies. But a plague began among the people, and before it was through, 70,000 people died because of the sin that David had committed. Now if we turn back to the account in 2 Samuel chapter 24, 2 Samuel chapter 24, we see that yes, indeed, David repented. In 2 Samuel chapter 24 in verse 10, the writer tells us that David's heart smote him after that he had numbered the people. And David said unto Jehovah, I have sinned greatly in that which I have done. But now, O Jehovah, put away, I beseech thee, the iniquity of thy servant, for I have done very foolishly. Yes, God could forgive him, and would. But there were severe consequences to the sin that David had committed. Something else I want us to think about. David had a lot of things in his life that were of great concern, and we'll see exactly why. Many hated David. David said in Psalms chapter 69 and in verse 4, they that hate me are like the hairs of my head. That's a lot of people. David had a lot of enemies. One of those enemies was King Saul. You recall how that after Saul had been rejected from being king, he sought to kill David. In 1 Samuel chapter 18, 1 Samuel chapter 18, beginning about verse 10, we learn that that Saul had an evil spirit, and it came mightily upon him. And the text tells us in the latter part of verse 10 that Saul had a spear in his hand, and Saul cast the spear, for he said, I will smite David even to the wall. And David avoided out of the presence of his presence twice. And Saul was afraid of David because Jehovah was with him and was departed from Saul. Well, there were a number of times, many times, that King Saul sought the life of young David. He pursued him. Chapters 23 through chapter 24 would challenge you or ask you simply to read from these chapters and see how many places King Saul followed David trying to hurt him or trying to kill him. We also see that David had another enemy, and that was his own son. Absalom conspired to take the kingdom away from his father, David. In 2 Samuel chapter 15, 2 Samuel chapter 15, we read beginning in verse 12. 2 Samuel chapter 15, beginning in verse 12. The text tells us, and Absalom sent for Ahithophel, the Gileonite, David's counselor, from his city, even from Geloth, while he was offering the sacrifices. And the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. Now that's the beginning. But you can read that all the way through to 2 Samuel chapter 19, where we see of the engagements between David and his son, Absalom. I also want to call your attention in particular to 2 Samuel chapter 18 and in verse 5. Toward the end of this confrontation between David and his son, Absalom, we learn that the king, David, instructs those of his army to deal gently for my sake with the young man, even Absalom. In verse 12 of this chapter, it tells us, and the man said unto Joab, though I should receive 1,000 pieces of silver in my hand, yet would I not put forth my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing the king charged thee, and Abishai, and Ittai, saying, beware that none touch the young man Absalom. Even though David's son Absalom had proven himself to be an enemy to David, David didn't want anything bad to happen to his son. But ultimately, it did. In the latter portion of the 18th chapter, as reports concerning the battle come in unto David, David raised the question, is it well with the young man Absalom? And Ahimaaz answered, when Joab sent the king's servant, even me thy servant, I saw the great tumult, but I knew not what it was. Another servant came in verse 31, a Cushite, and David asked, is it well with the young man Absalom? And the Cushite answered, the enemies of my lord the king and all that rise up against thee to do thee hurt be as that young man is. The Cushite is telling David, your son is dead. Your son is dead. And David grieved deeply. In the next few verses of this chapter, you'll see in verse 33, it says, and the king was much moved, and went up to the chamber over the gate, and wept. And as he went, thus he said, O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, Would I had died for thee, O Absalom, my son, my son. And it was told Joab, behold, the king weeping and weepeth and mourneth for Absalom. And the victory that day was turned into mourning to all the people. For the people heard say that day, the king grieveth for his son. And the people gat them by stealth that day unto the city, as people that are ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. And the king covered his face, and the king cried with a loud voice, O my son, Absalom, my son, or Absalom, my son, my son. David's heart is broken, but his enemy was his own son. I find it interesting that what appears to be in a time of deep grief, David wrote in Psalms chapter 118 what we read quoted in Hebrews chapter 13, reading beginning in verse 6, where the Hebrew writer says, so that with good courage we say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What shall man do unto me? David sees the need to get past this, as difficult as it was. Again, we see the Old Testament, Psalms chapter 55, verse 22, quoted by Peter in 1 Peter chapter 5, when he said, casting all your anxiety upon him, because he careth for you. David understood the conflict. He understood the source of his anxiety, but he also understood he couldn't stay there. The people were becoming very much discouraged. And Joab, the captain, came to him in chapter 19 and verse 5 of 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel chapter 19, verse 5. And he said, thou hast shamed this day the faces of all thy servants, who this day have saved thy life and the lives of thy sons and of thy daughters, and the lives of thy wives and the lives of thy concubines, in that thou lovest them and hate thee. And in that thou lovest them that hate thee, and hatest them that love thee. For thou hast declared this day that princes and servants are not unto thee. For this day I perceive that if Absalom had lived, and all we had died this day, then it had pleased thee well. Do you see the point that Joab is making? You're shaming the people that fought for you. Perhaps you would be happier if they had died and Absalom had lived. And the next verse tells us, Now therefore arise, go forth and speak comfortably unto thy servants, for I swear by Jehovah, if thou go not forth, there will not tarry a man with thee this night, and that will be worse with thee or unto thee than all the evil that hath befallen thee from thy youth until now. And the king arose and sat in the gate, and they told unto all the people, saying, behold, the king is sitting in the gate. And all the people came before the king. The king had to overcome this. Sometimes anxiety begins to wear on us. We get discouraged. Bad things happen to us. And sometimes we get down like David and just can't seem to get up. But David survived. He overcame the anxiety. There's another thing about David that we need to note, and that is David wanted to kill because of certain things that were happening to him. Nabal, in 1 Samuel chapter 25, David and those in his company came to Nabal, and they requested that Nabal would provide some nourishment for them. Let's turn to 1 Samuel chapter 25. In 1 Samuel chapter 25, Nabal said, and I want to read this because I want to get it right. In verse 10, Nabal said, who is David and who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants nowadays that break away every man from his master. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my flesh that I have killed for my shearers and give it unto men of whom I know not whence they are? Now, that sounds like a plausible explanation, doesn't it? Who is David? You want me to take my stuff and give it to him? Won't do it. Who is he? Well, that angered David. And David was about to take the life of Nabal. And if you'll read beginning in verse 24, Nabal's wife, whose name was Abigail, it tells us that she fell at his feet and said, upon me, my Lord, upon me be the iniquity. And let thy handmaid, I pray thee, speak in thine ears, and hear thou the words of thy handmaid. Let not my Lord, I pray thee, regard this worthless fellow, even Nabal. For his name is, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, thy handmaid, saw not the young men of my Lord whom thou didst send. And of course, she then makes provisions for them. But she calls upon David to not avenge. Don't kill Nabal. And we find that David heeded the things that she had to say. And in verse 32, he said to Abigail, "Blessed be Jehovah, the God of Israel, who sent thee this day to meet me, and blessed be thy discretion, and blessed be thou that hast kept me this day from blood guiltiness and from avenging myself with mine own hand." Well, David was angry enough at Nabal to kill him, but he got past that. When Saul was threatening his life and following him from place to place, David had opportunity to kill King Saul. He did so in Gedi, and he did so in Ziph. In these instances, however, Saul knew that David had been there in Gedi. David cut off a piece of his garment. And at Ziph, he took his spear and took his water bottle. So Saul knew that David had been there and had spared his life. So David allowed Saul to live. He allowed Nabal to live. David had a battle with revenge, but he got past it. David had a battle with his own lust in 2 Samuel chapter 11. 2 Samuel chapter 11. First of all, we see in verse 1 that David tarried at Jerusalem during the time of war. Second, we learn that David went upon his roof and he saw Bathsheba bathing on her roof. And the text tells us that he desired to have her, and in verse 4, David sent messengers and took her, and she came in unto him, and he lay with her. Now he's coveted another man's wife. Now he's committed adultery with her. He calls in Uriah, her husband, the Hittite, and tries to get Uriah to go home to think that the child that is conceived is his. That doesn't work. He tries to get Uriah drunk so that in his drunkenness he'll go home and lay with his wife and think that the child is his. That didn't work. Then David sent Uriah back to the battlefield with his own condemnation, a letter that told the captain to go into the fiercest of the battle and withdraw the troops from Uriah and allow him to die. And so Uriah was killed. And when report came to David that Uriah the Hittite was dead, look if you would please at verse 25. It tells us, "Then David said unto the messenger, Thus shalt thou say unto Joab, Let not this thing displease thee, for the sword devoureth one as well as another. Make thy battle more strong against the city, and overthrow it, and encourage thou him." David's explanation of the death of Uriah is hypocritical. David had ordered Uriah the Hittite's death, and now he claims that one dies in battle just as another. In the 12th chapter of 2 Samuel, in verse 14, we learn that this has caused the enemies of God to have occasion to blaspheme God. This is a serious thing that David has done. But though David had a battle with his lust, he overcame that. In 2 Samuel chapter 12, Nathan the prophet came unto David and described a circumstance that broke David's heart. How that one had taken an old man's little ewe lamb and had slain it for a guest when he had many lambs. And David was angry and said that the man that had done this is worthy to die. And he shall restore the lamb fourfold because he has done this and because he had no pity. And you recall the words of Nathan when he said, "Thou art the man." David recognized that and repented of the sin that he had committed. But I want you to observe that David's repentance did not remove consequence. In verse 10 of chapter 12, it says, "Now therefore the sword shall never depart from thy house, because thou hast despised me and hast taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be thy wife. Thus saith Jehovah, Behold, I will raise up evil against thee out of thine own house, and I will take thy wives before thine eyes and give them unto thy neighbor, and he shall lie with thy wives in the sight of this son." Well, if you recall, regarding the battles with David and Absalom, it came to pass just exactly as was stated. David's heart was broken. We see evidence of that in Psalms chapter 51, as he said, "My sin is ever before me." He said, "Sacrifices I would offer, if that's what you desire. The sacrifice doesn't please." He said, "A broken and a contrite heart, that is acceptable." David's heart was broken because of the sin that he had committed. But that was not the end of his battles. David faced a battle with despair. When you consider 2 Samuel chapter 12 and the child that was conceived between David and Bathsheba, God said, "Because of what you did, the child shall surely die." Verse 14. In verse 15 beginning, we learn that David fasted. He lay all night upon the earth. He would not be comforted. But the child died. In 2 Samuel chapter 13, David had a daughter. Her name was Tamar. David had another son, Amnon. Amnon lusted for his sister and raped her. Absalom lay a plot that took him 2 years to unfold in order that he might kill his brother Amnon. And then, as we've read, Absalom rebels against David and Absalom is killed. That's a whole lot of tragedy in one man's life. But yet we note that as desperate as David was, David overcame despair. Now, very quickly, what do we learn from all of these things in David's life? One is we learn a lesson on courage. We need to be afraid of him that hath the power to take our body and soul and destroy it. But we don't need to fear those who can only destroy our body. In Revelation chapter 21, verse 8, we note that among those who will be destroyed are labeled the fearful. David was not fearful. We need to learn to have courage. Another lesson that we can learn is we can learn about humility. David had accomplished a lot of things, but in those accomplishments, we ought not allow that to go to our head. David learned and wrote in Psalms chapter 8 in verses 3 and 4, "When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou visitest him?" How small we are in all of God's creation. Furthermore, we learn a lesson on trust. As we mentioned, David is quoted in Hebrews chapter 13, quoted also in 1 Peter chapter 5, that we need to cast all of our anxieties upon him. And friend, that's not always easy to do. The Apostle Paul, writing in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, in verse 13, assures us that we'll not be tempted with anything except that which we are able to bear. But will with the temptation, God will provide a way of escape. The Apostle Paul, writing to those in Philippi, said, "Be not anxious. Be not anxious. But in everything, with prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known unto God." Friend, that's not always easy to do when you consider all of the things that were on David's mind. Certainly, it must have been difficult to overcome that. But we also learn a lesson on patience. David lived under the law of Moses, where the text tells us that vengeance is mine and recompense. Jehovah will judge his people, Deuteronomy chapter 32. Certainly we don't live under that system. But as we've been studying this morning in our Bible class, we noted in Romans chapter 12 and in verse 19 that we're not to avenge ourselves, but to give place unto the wrath of God. Wasn't that what David did? Something else I want us to learn is a lesson on self-control. David did not exercise self-control with Bathsheba. And we need, and David needed, to learn how to control what he thinks about, what we think about. In Matthew, the 15th chapter, in verse 18, the Lord said, "But the things which proceed out of the mouth come forth out of the heart, and they defile the man. For out of the heart come forth evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, railings. These are the things which defile the man, but to eat with unwashed hands defileth not the man." David allowed himself to entertain thoughts that he should have never thought about. And consequently, he committed sin with Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah the Hittite. On the contrary, Joseph in Genesis chapter 39, when tempted by Potiphar's wife, fled and got him out. He knew there was a place that he did not need to be. He exercised self-control and fled. Another lesson that we need to learn is a lesson on hope. Sometimes things are not always, at least, as bad as they seem. David wrote in the 23rd Psalm, I want to begin with verse 1, as he said, and I'm reading from the American Standard, "Jehovah is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside still waters. He restoreth my soul. He guideth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou hast anointed my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and loving kindness shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of Jehovah forever." As David writes these words, you see hope. No, everything is not always dark. There is hope. And David recognized that and would not despair. Now, the thing that I want to wind our study up with is what you see here. When David is an old man, and he's about to pass the torch, as it were, to his son Solomon, the words that he says unto Solomon, I believe, are noteworthy. "And thou, Solomon, my son, know thou the God of thy father, and serve him with a perfect heart and a willing mind. For Jehovah searcheth all hearts, and understandeth all the imaginations of the thoughts. If thou seek him, he will be found of thee. But if thou forsake him, he will cast thee off forever." What a statement. What an admonition to give to your son. David had learned some valuable lessons, but he had learned them in the University of Hard Knocks. Sometimes the lessons that we learn the hard way because we won't listen to those who've traveled before us. That's our study. Perhaps I'm talking to someone in the audience tonight who needs to obey the gospel. You know what it is to be separated from God. The shame of being lost. The fear of being lost forever. Knowing that Jesus came and offered you the opportunity to escape from that, would you not avail yourself of it? That He died to shed His blood in order that you might be forgiven. What could be more important to you? Why not turn from the things that are wrong? That means stop doing the things that you know are wrong. Start doing the things that you know are right. Confess your faith and be baptized into Christ for the remission of your sins, to begin a new life in Christ. Maybe you've started down that path and you've not been faithful. You've got to fix that. You've just got to fix that. God doesn't want you to be lost. He gave His Son that you might be saved. But that's conditioned upon you turning from the thing that's wrong, confessing it, and asking His forgiveness. If we can help you this evening in your obedience, make it known while we stand and sing this song. Just as I am without